How many times have you said to yourself, I just can't get stuff done? It's a common problem in our fast-paced lives with so many distractions to take us away from the task at hand. At work and at home, there's just too much demand on our time and not enough hours in the day to do all of the big and little tasks that have to be done, not to mention the fun things we want to do. We talked to two experts on the topic and found a few ways to think about and structure activities so you can do what needs to be done without all the stress of being overwhelmed. David Allen is a productivity consultant and author of the best-selling book, Getting Things Done: The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. He says that in order to get things done, we have to first decide what done means.
In other words, what's the outcome you're committed to, and what's the very next physical, visible activity that needs to go on in order to get there? And believe it or not, most people avoid those two decisions like the plague. When things show up, they don't show up in nice, pretty packages like that. In other words, when you open that email, it's not saying, well, gee, now that you've opened this email, here's the outcome you're now committed to finish, and here's the next action you need to take to get from here to there. You have to do that. So making those kinds of executive decisions, what does this mean? What does this mean to me? That's the biggest reason I see that people aren't getting things done, is because they haven't defined what done means and what doing looks like and where it happens. They just got this stuff pulling on their psyche, but they don't sit down and actually unpack it at that level of both granularity as well as specificity.
There are the to-do lists, but Allen says that there's usually no specific action involved. What does mom mean on a list, or cat food? One of the keys is to capture and clarify what it is that you need to accomplish.
Well, it's pretty simple. If something pops into your head, oh, I need cat food, write it down, unless you're going to go buy cat food that very second. Right, so get it out of your head. So that's the capture piece. Basically, write down anything that's got your attention. Make a note about it. And then the clarify step is decide, okay, now what exactly am I committed to finish about that, if anything? Is there a project here I need to identify? And if so, what's the project? Oh, I need to give mom a birthday party. Okay, fine. Then put that on a project list. And then what's the very next action about mom's birthday? Oh, I ought to call my sister and see what she thinks about that. Great. So call sis. If you don't call your sister right then that needs to be parked somewhere that when you get to a phone, you'll see that as a reminder of something that you could do then. So that's the capture and clarify. And the organize step is just park those things in places that you'll see at the right time.
Even the best laid plans are subject to interruptions. How do you deal with the ad hoc things that pop up when you're busy getting your projects done?
The ideal is to have as small a backlog of unprocessed stuff as possible. If you've got 3,000 emails that have all kinds of hidden things embedded in them that you know you need to deal with, anything feels bad as new input that comes in, especially that's unplanned. If your in-basket is zeroed out, as mine is fairly regularly, then when new stuff comes in, you can evaluate that against all the other options and possibilities. So you can either do it because it's more important than any of the rest, in which case that's just smart, or you can not do it right then because there are more important things to do at this point, but you then keep a placeholder of that so you don't have to feel bad about that. Actually, there are no interruptions. There's only mismanaged input.
Allen says that using those three processes, capturing, clarifying, and organizing, you can reduce the stress of thinking about all of the things you have to do. He also says that there's just so much energy your brain can invest in making decisions, so you need to choose the best times to tackle the really important things.
A lot of the cognitive science research in the last few years has validated the fact that your brain can actually get tired making decisions. The whole idea of decision fatigue, the forebrain is actually a part of your brain that if you're using that a lot, it needs rest. You need to be able to stop and relax. Part of the methodology, and one of the cool things about the getting things done methodology, is when you have an inventory of all of the stuff that you might need to do, a lot of those do not require the same kind of cognitive horsepower as many of the others. Even if you're not feeling really well, or your energy's down, or you're tired, or you're just resting and relaxing, there are probably a lot of things that you could still be productive about, but you need to map and match whatever you're trying to do with the kind of energy you're throwing at it.
Brain power also figures prominently in Steve McClatchy's process for accomplishing things. McClatchy is the founder of Allure Training and Consulting and author of the book Decide: Work Smarter, Reduce Your Stress, and Lead by Example. He says that there are two types of activities we need to get done: maintenance and improvement. Maintenance things are the everyday activities of living, such as buying milk. You don't have to do it right now, but it still needs to be done to prevent pain later. Improvement tasks are those things that will move your life forward, like finding a better job. The key is to balance the two, but McClatchy says it's not always easy to do.
When improvement and maintenance are next to each other, your brain gives a higher priority to the maintenance item every time. Why? Maintenance items represent survival to your brain. The number one priority of your brain when it's making decisions is survival. And we don't appreciate survival anymore. I mean, we're in artificially temperatured rooms with artificial lighting. We, you know, we don't think about a cheetah. We don't get to work and arrive at work in our car and think about a cheetah. But for 6 million years of evolution, our brain can't stop thinking about that cheetah. Your brain is 10 times more sensitive to a survival task than it is joy, happiness, and satisfaction. So the key is, how do we do both? I mean, if we can get both each day, that would be the goal.
So how do we balance those improvement and maintenance items? McClatchy says there are two tools, the to-do list and the calendar.
We treat things on the calendar significantly different than the way we treat things on a to-do list, without even thinking about it. So if I said to you, hey, let's get together Monday night, what's the first thing you would check?
Most of us would check to see if we were free at that time.
That's huge. I know that doesn't sound like a big deal, but you're going to check something before you make a decision. Checking before. Think about that activity throughout your entire life. Well, let me check something before I make a decision about this. Whatever you're checking is going to significantly influence the decision you're about to make. See, a to-do list, you don't check. A to-do list is for adding to after the decision's made. So if I was sharing with you this great article I just read and you said, hey, Steve, can you send me that article when you get a chance? I'm like, yeah, I'll shoot it right over. I just made a decision. I didn't check anything. I add it to my list after I make the decision. But for a calendar, you're going to check it before. So now you go to check it and you say, oh, I can't do Monday night. I could do Tuesday or Wednesday. Now look at the priority you just gave what you put on Monday night. You scheduled something for Monday night. Then when it came under attack, you defended it.
Because we have commitments on our calendars that we don't like to change, McClatchy says we'll fall behind on some of the maintenance items, but that's okay. It's a way to prioritize what we do so we can balance the improvements with the more mundane things. And if you get a bit too far behind on the things that others can do as well or better than you can, delegate.
There's a big difference between delegation and dumping. And a lot of people get hung up with delegation because they view it as dumping. Dumping is, I'm giving you to do something that I would never do myself. Delegation is, while you're doing this, I'll do this. And we take advantage of the opportunity cost of that time. If the reason you're paying somebody else to mow your lawn is you're going to work on or master something with that time. If you're going to, as a company, delegate your website to another company, and with that time, you're going to get better and faster at what you do. Delegate.
Then there's the problem of procrastination whenever you're facing a task that you're not crazy about doing. McClatchy says that putting things off is not always bad and, in fact, can get you fired up to get stuff done.
All of a sudden, we get to the point where if we don't do it, if we don't take out the trash right now, we're about to deal with the consequences, the pain of not doing it. And all of a sudden, we look at not doing it as actually more work at this point than doing it. And what happens? We get scared. Now we get scared and adrenaline releases. So fear releases adrenaline. Adrenaline contains painkillers. And painkillers are where all the energy comes from to do a task we didn't like.
He says it's the brain's way of doing things it doesn't like to do. And eventually, your body creates the energy to get going. McClatchy says there's also another benefit to putting things off.
You stay focused. I mean, if you've left only an hour to do it and your phone rings, well, you don't take the call. And now this thing you don't like is only in your life for 1 hour, not an hour and a half. So it does keep us focused and it keeps things we don't like in our life for less time. So that's another benefit. Another benefit of it is when you have something big that you're procrastinating, like a big project, well, now all of a sudden your expense report is not that big a deal. So sometimes it gives perspective to the little things that bother us, and we run around doing little things with energy, knowing we're really procrastinating this big thing, and that's a benefit, because you didn't want to do those little things either.
McClatchy says that people he's taught say that learning to accomplish a goal has also helped in their home lives and has strengthened relationships with loved ones and friends. Alan says getting started with your project is the hard part. He says it's very important to write tasks down, both big and little, to get them out of your head so you can focus. And with his system, you can start anywhere.
The book is written such that if you actually wanted to walk yourself through the process, part two of the book actually is the coaching process. It's a blow-by-blow. If you hired me to sit desk side with you and walk you through the implementation of the process, I actually wrote that in the book. So if you wanted to follow directions, it's in there. And you can just skip around, you know, pick one or two things. This is not running with scissors. Nothing in there would hurt if you did it. Heck, if you just kept a pad and pen by your bed, if you don't already, you'll sleep better. So you don't have to implement a whole lot of this to get a lot of value out of it.
You can read up on David Allen's system in his book, Getting Things Done, available in stores and on his website, gettingthingsdone.com. Steve McClatchy's book, Decide, is also available in stores and online, and he invites listeners to his website at allier.com. For information about all of our guests, you can log on to our site at viewpointsonline.net. You can also find archives of past programs there and on iTunes and Stitcher. I'm Gary Price.
Summer vacations are a welcome disruption to our routines, but they're not the time for heart attack survivors to take a vacation from their medications. Did you know that after one heart attack, patients have a higher risk for another? Dr. Warren J. Wexelman, cardiologist at the NYU School of Medicine, says patients can help reduce their ongoing risk by asking their doctors about treatment options and how a 90-day prescription may help with adherence.
After a heart attack, there are several medications you may be prescribed to reduce your risk of another one. However, one study showed rates of adherence were as low as 63% after 3 months. Non-adherence is a serious issue. It's crucial patients take medicines as prescribed to optimize their treatment. One tip to maintain your treatment routine is to ask your doctor about a 90-day medication supply, which one study showed improved adherence by 20% versus those requiring refills every 30 days.
When considering treatment options for you, be sure to ask your doctor about Brilinta Ticagrelor 90 mg tablets, a prescription for adults who have been hospitalized for a heart attack, also known as acute coronary syndrome. Brilinta is used to lower your chance of having another heart attack or dying from one. Take Brilinta twice daily with low-dose aspirin once daily. Don't take aspirin higher than 100 milligrams daily, as this affects how well Brilinta works. Don't stop taking Brilinta without talking to your doctor, since stopping it too soon increases your risk of clots in your stent, heart attack, stroke, and even death. Brilinta may cause bruising or bleeding more easily, or serious, sometimes fatal bleeding. Don't take Brilinta if you have bleeding like stomach ulcers, a history of bleeding in the brain, or severe liver problems. Slow heart rhythm has been reported. Tell your doctor about bleeding, new or unexpected shortness of breath, any planned surgery, and all medicines you take. For more information, see our ad in Weight Watchers magazine, visit Brilinta.com, or call 1-800-BRILINTA. If you can't afford your medication, AstraZeneca may be able to help. This summer, ask your doctor about an effective medication that can help protect you from having another heart attack. Don't forget to ask for a 90-day prescription to help you avoid a medication vacation.
We're all familiar with the tale of Peter Pan, but how vastly different is that story through the eyes of Captain Hook? What if Peter Pan is really the villain? I'm John Pielmeyer, and that's the premise of my new novel, Hook's Tale, being the account of an unjustly villainized pirate written by himself. Hook's Tale is a wildly entertaining memoir in the tradition of Gregory Maguire's Wicked, a radical new version of a classic story where Peter Pan's legendary nemesis finally sets the record straight. I've previously written Agnes of God and the stage adaptation of The Exorcist, and here I spin the fascinating backstory of young James Cook before he became Captain Hook. A kidnapped runaway at age 13 who finds himself stranded in the Never Isles, he adopts a baby crocodile, falls in love with Tiger Lily, and lends his shadow to a mysterious flying boy. Ultimately, Captain Hook has to make the most difficult decision of his life. His choice, like his story, isn't what you might expect. Hook's Tale by John Leonard Pielmeyer is available in hardcover and digital at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and wherever fine books are sold.